Hello, this is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Yay!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Vermont continues to lead the country in overall vaccination rates. Based on the latest statistics, 78% of people over 40 have had at least one shot. But the numbers fall dramatically when it comes to younger people. Only 41% of Vermonters under 40 have received at least one shot, and the number of new COVID cases in this age category actually increased 23% in the last few weeks. As a result, the Scott administration has embarked on a barnstorming strategy to make vaccines available in a wide variety of places, walk-in clinics, college campuses, marketplaces, and racetracks, to name a few. Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine says these steps are needed because there's so much information about the COVID vaccine on the internet.
Every aspect of the pandemic is well represented on the internet, from should you get a vaccine, to why isn't a certain treatment being used more often than it is, towards is there really a pandemic at all? You know, the list goes on and on and on. So we're able to combat things when we're confronted with them, but when an individual is focused on what they've read, it's very, very challenging.
Today in the program, we're going to look at what's being described as what I called the state's barnstorming strategy to encourage more young people to get vaccinated. And our guest today is Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine. Commissioner, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Good to be here.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to answer our questions. Commissioner, as you just mentioned in that clip, there's a tremendous amount of misinformation about almost every aspect of life on the internet, healthcare, politics, sports, business news, just to name a few. It's quite common to hear people say, yeah, but I read it on the internet. It sounds like for the time being, the health department is kind of in a reactive mode. You hear about a false claim and then you feel a need to address it. Is that pretty much what's happening?
Oh, completely not true, Bob. I would say that we do every effort possible, starting with twice weekly press conferences, moving to what's on our website, and lots of reaching out to media, so that we're always trying to be up front and center with presenting what we believe are the facts and what we believe Vermonters want to hear and need to hear. I do admit we have to get into a reactive mode if we're confronted with a question that clearly comes from a place that we don't believe is reputable or that has any scientific validity to it, and we'll continue to do that. But I really do think throughout the pandemic, we've been really as proactive as possible. And I think that's provided us with some really good feedback from Vermonters, because when you look at some surveys that are done both locally and nationally, it turns out Vermonters trust the messengers. So they look to the Department of Health, they look to the governor of the state, and others in the administration to really provide them with factual information and tell those in the survey business that that's where they're getting their factual information. So I think we've had success, but you can only combat misinformation as much as you can when it confronts you.
Let's look at some of these claims that people are making. One is that young people, that is people under 30, who are healthy, have absolutely no need to be vaccinated. They're going to do just fine on their own. What do you say to that?
Yes, I get that one a lot. And while I do want to be completely truthful and acknowledge that indeed, most young people are not going to have a severe course of illness, and they will do fine. That's most. That's not all. And when I say most and not all, there are going to be individuals, especially when you have more and more cases within an age group, that are on the end of the spectrum that doesn't do as well. And you can just find out when you talk to people who've had COVID that sometimes that illness they had, though it was not lengthy, it was significant and worse than the typical flu they might get from influenza virus. You also talk to individuals who say, you know, it wasn't that the symptoms were that bad, but it just took a long time for them to go away. And I thought, you know, 10 days later, I'd be bouncing back and I'd be able to go for my usual run or my usual walk or whatever. And that didn't happen for a couple of months. And then in a smaller group, you hear about the so-called long haul syndrome, which is, of course, people who I usually define it as after 3 or 4 months after the onset of their illness, they have symptoms that just won't go away. And whether that's very much paralyzing fatigue, whether it's exercise intolerance, shortness of breath, the brain fog that is often referred to, all of these symptoms are reported by this group. And the subject of research now is to really understand what percentage of people who have had COVID fall in this group. And the typical numbers are as low as 1% and as high as 10 to 30%. I don't think it's up to the 30% range, but I know that there's plenty out there, and I've heard from them and talked with them, and they're not having a good time. And then, of course, you have the minority of people in the lower age groups who are going to end up in the hospital or end up, God forbid, dying, which is a very low rate. But even those in the hospital, if you talk to those who run the hospitals this week, you'll find that more of the COVID patients they have are younger than in the older age groups. And some of those are in the ICU. So no one is completely spared. And my feeling is if you have a vaccine that's highly effective and been proven to be safe, that's a good gamble to make. Take that vaccine rather than gamble on what's my outcome going to be from COVID when and if I do get it.
Are you surprised that whatever percentage it turns out of folks who have these long-term effects, be it 1% or 30% or somewhere in between, are you surprised by that development? Did you see that or was that on your radar screen coming into this?
Definitely not coming into this, and probably not until the middle of last year, because obviously an epidemic has to go on long enough so you can begin to define people by how they do in terms of their prognosis and their outcomes. And so the first cases of this, if we defined it, let's say, arbitrarily at 3 or 4 months after the onset of illness, wouldn't have even occurred until, you know, our first case in Vermont was the beginning of March. So it wouldn't even have occurred until late in the summer or early fall. And that's when a lot of the national reports were coming out. And I think that's why we just don't know enough about it yet, because it's been a relatively recent phenomenon in a pandemic that we learn from every day.
And let's go back to that group of people who might be under 30, under 40, who have some hesitancy about being vaccinated. Some of our listeners might be thinking, okay, listen, if they don't want to get vaccinated, you know, that's sort of their decision. That's their problem. If they get sick, that would be unfortunate, but why should I care about it?
Yeah, so let me start with one point. I'm trying to rid our vocabulary of the term vaccine hesitancy. I just think it misrepresents so many of the people that are lumped in that group. You know, when I hear the word hesitancy, it means, I'm not quite ready yet. I might not believe in this at all. I don't believe in the virus. I don't believe in the vaccine. I don't trust the vaccine, what have you. And it betrays some level of confidence that's low. But my belief, and this is coming from now experience in Vermont over these months, is that we have many, many more Vermonters who are truly vaccine confident, but for some reason, and there's various reasons, they have not yet gotten vaccinated. And all we need to do is reach them, and we can accomplish that for them if we meet them where they are. So I don't see it as much of a hesitancy as, you know, I don't like the term because they're not exactly hesitant. They just haven't prioritized it in the way that we would like them to. Now, part of your question also alludes to the fact that we should consider ourselves a greater Vermont community, and what one person does can and may have an effect on everybody else. So sort of appealing to people's altruism, if you will. They're wanting to help other Vermonters. And we've seen that all along. You know, we asked everybody to put their own need, perceived need and feelings about vaccine on hold for a little bit so we could take care of the most vulnerable Vermonters first. And indeed, we started vaccinating the long-term care facilities, and then we started with the oldest of Vermonters, et cetera. And people have been very, very accepting of that and very understanding of that, and get the idea that, yes, there are people that may be more vulnerable than myself, and I should be working to help them. And I see that in, you know, when we ask people to wear masks and do other behaviors that aren't the day-to-day behaviors we ever did before a pandemic. So I think we have a good ethic of that in Vermont, and that should just extend to the vaccine enterprise as well, because indeed, every Vermonter getting vaccinated is helping every other Vermonter and all of us in general getting back to that kind of life that we wanted to have from before the pandemic.
We got this email from Amber. Because Vermont was one of the last states in the country to open vaccine eligibility to the 18 to 29 age group, many of us, myself included, sought vaccination out of state because we could get the vaccine more quickly. I had my first dose in New Hampshire because they opened vaccination eligibility to non-residents the same day that Vermont opened it to my age group. I know I'm not alone in having gone this route. I have a handful of friends who've done the same. I believe it's a more common occurrence than most people expect. Perhaps there should be a way for us to report to the Vermont Department of Health that we are vaccinated so they can take us into account into their numbers. Your thoughts about that, Commissioner?
Well, first of all, I love the fact that she was very proactive and just said, I'm not going to wait, and I have an opportunity, so I'll take it. As you know, and as Amber knows now, anybody in Vermont can't get vaccinated in Vermont without any problem. We do know that a number of college students actually took opportunities to either go back to their home state or do what Amber did. So that's all fine and good with me. The reality is we do get data from people that get vaccinated from another state. It will eventually end up in our immunization registry. And I don't think we're being misled, if that was the intent of the question, into thinking that our rates are even lower than we might have imagined because we don't have complete data yet. Because we do get this data in with some lag time, but not a great lag time, so that we understand that people have gotten vaccinated in other states. I think the place where we've had the most difficulty is those that are getting vaccinated by federal programs, like the Department of Defense, like veterans, et cetera. And we're getting new insights into what those numbers represent as well, which is going to help us understand in aggregate for many of our Vermonters, how many of them have been vaccinated.
Commissioner, I wanted to talk to you yesterday at the governor's press briefing. You talked about this barnstorming strategy and the state having a strategy of let's go meet people where they are. In practical terms, what does that mean?
You know, I, like you, wondered, what is barnstorming? And how does that translate into people getting vaccinated? So I would think of barnstorming as really over the course of a day or several days appearing through mobile clinics in a variety of locations around usually a county in the state. So we would use rural teams like our EMS workforce who've been very instrumental in this kind of a strategy. We would use local leaders who can both advertise for us and endorse what's going on and really appear in places that may be more remote or more rural, might be more challenging for people to get to a mass vaccination site. And as you kind of implied, bring the vaccine to them, meeting people where they are. These are so-called place-based approaches that in public health we use in a variety of enterprises. So the barnstorming is in progress this week, actually, and over the course of the weekend. And it will be an enduring part of our strategy. There'll also be a variety of other strategies utilized, though. Some of these will be completely available for people who want to walk into a clinic, just like a mobile clinic brings it to you. You can go to a clinic without having gone through an extensive registration process. The drive-through idea is one that we're also entertaining in a number of locations. And then kind of special, unique locations, if you will, places like some of the racetracks, which are, I think, going to be very popular with hopefully a whole broad demographic, not just people interested in the sport that happens to occur there, just because it's a very unique setting and it's set up in a very user-friendly way for people to get into and out of, so to speak. And then we're talking, you know, we've already started working with college campuses, and we will continue to do so. And I have to acknowledge that, you know, that's a unique experience right now because college students are studying and taking their final exams. And I understand completely when they want to appropriately wait for after their finals. And if our clinics don't coincide with those dates well, that they may wait a little longer. So it doesn't mean they're vaccine hesitant. It means they're hesitating because they want to be completely tip-top shape for doing well on an exam. So that also was very, very important. We'll also be doing a lot of work with specific sectors of our economy, whether that be large employers that have a workforce that may be more reluctant to have to take time off from work to get their vaccine, but would certainly get it if it was available at the workplace. People in industries where their schedules are kind of funny and, you know, maybe restaurants, what have you, where we can actually work with that industry to vaccinate a whole bunch, either on site or through hubs. So a lot of ideas of that sort. We'll also continue doing a lot with what we term our vulnerable populations, working with the homeless at various sites where they are living at this time or in shelters, working in the farm-to-farm program with some of our migrant farm workers, working at food distribution sites, mobile home parks, you know, trying again to make sure that if a Vermonter isn't going to be vaccinated, it's certainly not going to be because we didn't make the effort to get the vaccine conveniently to them and on a schedule that would meet their needs.
We think we have our phone problem solved, Commissioner, so let's find out. Let's see how confident we are and try Richard in Shrewsbury. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, it's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, great to hear yours, and thank you for the for your show, and thank you, Dr. Levine, for all you've been doing for our state.
Thank you.
So, Richard, do you have a comment you'd like to make or a question?
Yeah, my question is, I have some family members who are various ages. I've had the vaccine, as has my wife. We both got the two-shot Pfizer, and some of our family members are resisting, and they keep coming back to citing some literature they found on the internet. I think one of them was a Danish study that indicates that the possibility that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines potentially suppress the immune system going forward in one's life. So, like, if your immune system is operating at 100% now, you get these vaccines, your immune system may only be operating at like 90% going forward in the course of your life. That doesn't seem to me to be very logical, but it's something that they're sticking to. And if you could provide me any information to counteract that, maybe we could get them vaccinated.
Thanks for that question. I appreciate that very much because it allows me to sort of get into a discussion about how do you talk with family and with friends who may not be as eager as you were to get vaccinated. So, you know, I can tell just listening to you and the way you asked your question that you're an understanding person. You probably obeyed rule number one, which was listen to your family member or friend with some empathy, knowing that they're not at the stage of vaccine uptake as you are. Listen to them without expressing any judgment and try to get to understand exactly what their concern is. You appropriately have said, well, gee, you know, that may have been in some Danish study, but I have not been hearing that ever before. The CDC doesn't say that. Perhaps my own physician wouldn't say that. So try to get your relative to actually engage with more than just the one source that they found, and whether that be their own healthcare provider, whether that be going to the CDC website, either way, they're going to get more information regarding that. And just listen to their concerns in a very open-ended question kind of way so that they can express the breadth of their concern with you. And then, you know, if you actually have some information you think would be helpful, just ask their permission for you to share that information. You may find that place on the CDC website that talks about immune systems and the vaccine. You may find other resources that you feel might be helpful for them to read to sort of broaden their experience on the topic. And then just don't leave the conversation without at least understanding if they have a reason to get vaccinated that you can work with them, because everybody, you know, would look at vaccine as an opportunity. And for some, it's an opportunity for a return to work or return to school or just seeing friends in a group or at a restaurant or what have you, visiting people they haven't visited before. So really get at those reasons and see if those reasons can somehow become more prominent in the forefront of their mind, so that they're not actually going to use what one thing they found on the internet to counterbalance it in a significant way. And then the last step would be, of course, if they have a barrier to making vaccine happen for them at all, see if you can help them with that. And I've been talking at the press conferences a lot about helping them get the appointment, helping them understand where opportunities for vaccination are available that would meet their needs, helping with transportation, helping with childcare, et cetera. So thanks for the question. It allowed me to answer it a little bit more broadly than you anticipated.
Richard, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's turn to Kristen, who's calling from Richmond. Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. So I'm calling as someone who has been working at some vaccine clinics, and over the past month, you know, the age range of the people who are coming in has really changed. And one of the things that I thought about strongly just this week is that we now have 16 and 17-year-olds who have come in, they have gotten vaccinated, and they are sitting there on their phones for 15 minutes waiting to see if there's a reaction. And it would be so amazing if we could use them as a social media, basically use that group of young people to let other folks know and to encourage them to get vaccinated, to let them know that there are still appointments available. And that one thing that would be really helpful is if there was some You know, if there was like a flyer that was in the paper material, if there was a sign at each clinic that said, hey, you know, let your friends know that you got vaccinated. Let your friends know that there are appointments available, because I feel like this younger age group is the group that's going to, that is going to be very motivational for them, and that we're really missing an opportunity for them to encourage their peers.
I appreciate that input very much. Number one, hats off to you for what you're doing at the vaccine clinics. I think you'll agree with me that that's probably one of the most positive experiences you've ever had in your life. I've gone to a number of the vaccine clinics, and I can't find a better time than going to one of those clinics. Everybody is smiling. Some are crying, but out of appreciation, not out of any other concern. Everybody is happy. They're really looking at the vaccine as something they've been waiting for, and looking at it in the context of what the last 14 months have been like for everybody. So thank you for that. We are actually, you've described something that in marketing terms, I think, is called social norming, which is letting people see their peers having a positive experience and a favorable experience, and allowing those peers to express themselves and have their peer group understand what is so positive for them. What did they see that the vaccine was going to provide for them that made it such an imperative thing to do in their life? So you're going to see a lot more of that in media over these next several weeks, where peers, not just peers in the very in the teenage group, but peers in other age groups as well, but certainly in the group you've raised as the issue, because that's very effective. And it really allows people to broaden their horizons a little bit and understand why for them, perhaps it may be an important thing to do as well. So you'll see more of that, although you may not be on all of the social media that this will be on for that age group, so you may not see all of it. Thanks.
Commissioner, are you anticipating that the vaccine for young people between the ages of 12 and 15 will be approved next week? And when might that be available in Vermont?
You know, every news outlet that I could possibly get my hands on is saying middle of next week is when the ACIP committee meets and will recommend that age group be eligible for the vaccine. So usually there's another step or two in the process in terms of the CDC itself and the FDA itself saying this is now extending the emergency use authorization for this age group as well. So by the end of next week, I expect that will happen. And I would think within 3 to 5 days at most of that announcement being made, we will be ready to directly work with that age group of 12 to 15-year-olds and begin getting them vaccinated. And that will happen in a variety of ways. As everyone is probably aware, they can only get one vaccine, and that would be the Pfizer, because that's the one that is going to be approved next week, we anticipate. Doesn't mean the others aren't safe in them, but it's just they haven't gone through the same approval process yet. So the vaccination sites will be some of the ones that are very familiar, which will be, of course, pharmacies and some of our mass vaccine sites. But there will also be opportunities to have school-based clinics. And hopefully some of those clinics will be in hours that will work for the students and for their parents as well. Stay tuned on that. But we are just very poised and anticipating that positive development. So we will be prepared.
Let's talk to Casey, who's calling from Braintree. Hi, Casey. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Doing great. You got a question today?
I just had a question for Dr. Mark Levine about like barnstorming the schools. Like, is that a possibility where you could bring it to the schools themselves, like for kids who aren't able to travel? and just, you know, make it more of an easier opportunity for them. Thank you.
Yeah, so it probably won't be in the barnstorming type of way, but it will happen. So the concept of bringing the vaccine to the schools is definitely on the drawing board, and the teams are working on that approach as we speak. So that will happen. Whether it would happen in the same way some of these mobile clinics occur, where you're going from one site to another over a several-hour period within a county, I can't say. It may just actually spring up at many of these sites at the same time. One thing we're blessed with in Vermont is we have phenomenal school nurses and school health on site at many, many of our schools, and certainly within communities. So even if there's not a nurse based at each school, there are nurses that are based in the community who could have a central site. But the bottom line is we would obviously be partnering with them so that there were plenty of hands, plenty of people on hand to help deliver the vaccine and set up a truly professionally set up site at those schools. So it will happen, much the way it's happening at the colleges now as well, but on a different scale, obviously.
Commissioner, you've talked about Vermont achieving herd immunity from this virus, and you suggested that could happen when 75 or 80% of all Vermonters are vaccinated. How confident are you that Vermont is going to reach this goal?
You know, if there's any state in the country that could reach this goal, it could be Vermont. How confident am I? Based on our current experience, I'm building confidence. But again, I don't want us to tie ourselves to a metric like that, because really, this is a personal choice people are making, and they all will have their own reasons. And I do think one of their reasons should be because they're Vermonters and want to make sure that they're helping protect all Vermonters. But at the same time, I really want them to find the reason that this makes sense for them and get to that point where they will be able to obtain the vaccine, and we will meet them wherever they need to be met in that manner. You have to understand that, you know, I think a lot of times this 18 to 29-year-old age group gets raised as an issue or a problem. And I don't want anyone to really view them that way. It's really our issue to meet them where they are, to provide the approaches that we've discussed during this hour to help them access the vaccine, to recognize that they have things going on in life as well, and to recognize that there may be things we can do that are pretty easy to do to facilitate their getting the vaccine, and don't make us go totally out of our way. I think listeners should really understand that Vermont is leading the country right now. You know, depending on which metric you look at, we're first in the country on vaccines administered per 100,000 people. We're second in the country with regard to the percent of the population who's received one or more doses of vaccine. And we're third in the country on percent of population fully vaccinated. So no matter how you sort of look at the numbers, we're up there at the top. We're doing a great job in Vermont, which means Vermont is doing a great job. Because if the Vermonters weren't showing up to get vaccinated, none of these numbers would mean anything. Yes, we've right. tried to facilitate that, but Vermonters are stepping up to the plate. And I have every bit of confidence that people in the very younger age ranges are also going to step up to the plate. And they've only had a more recent opportunity to step up to the plate. Mm-hmm. They haven't had as much time as some of our older ages who are now reaching numbers like 90 and 95% fully vaccinated in those ranges. So, you know, we're going to get there. We have to be a little more patient, but at the same time, of course, we're impatient because we really want to get to that level of immunity where we can resume so much of what we want to do in life without really thinking about the virus every second.
Exactly. And Commissioner, let me ask you a question that my colleague Jane Lindholm raised during our broadcast yesterday in terms of how protected really is Vermont. You've often talked about how the virus knows no boundaries or no borders. Let's say we reach herd immunity in Vermont, but that does not happen, just hypothetically, in the states around us. How well protected is Vermont under those circumstances?
You know, that's a great question. The reality is that if you have such a high level of community immunity present in the population, even when somebody travels out of state and then returns, or a visitor comes into the state and may have the ability to infect others, the virus is going to be stopped short in its tracks, because it's not going to have a lot of people it can go to be transmitted from one to another. And that's how you interrupt the whole cycle of transmissibility, mutation in the virus, development of variant strains, and then concerns about, gee, did a strain develop that's now becoming more dominant and it might make more people more sick, or it might evade the vaccine or what have you. You don't have those problems because even though an initial person coming back to Vermont may have had the virus, it isn't going to be able to spread very easily to anybody else. And that's where I think a level of protectiveness is really important on a broad population level. And though I didn't emphasize it when I was touting our statistics, and believe me, I'm not trying to brag, I'm just giving people the reality of how well we're doing. The other states that are doing as well as us are generally the ones that are in the Northeast. So we're talking about Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire. They're all doing very well by various of these metrics as well. And that's going to help us as a region in terms of the level of immunity, which I think is also important. And that was so critical through most of this pandemic. It's only in that late 2020, early 2021 surge we had here in the Northeast where the region did succumb and Vermont couldn't really be an island anymore. But we can now be a strong region and a strong island, if you will, if we reach these high levels of immunity for the reasons I've stated.
Let's talk to Karen, who's calling from Williamstown. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering about what kind of plans there are for prioritizing high-risk children when the vaccine rollout makes it available to them.
Thank you for that question. So we've had, you know, a number of prioritizations throughout the vaccine effort here, starting with age, of course, and then moving right on to high-risk conditions, those health conditions that would predict that somebody would have a rougher time if they got COVID. And then, of course, we had our strong effort with the BIPOC community, which is increasing in success as each day goes by. We intend to continue to still have those same priority groupings as the age of eligibility for vaccine goes down. Frankly, we're hoping, though, that we'll have so much vaccine available to deploy that though there may be an advantage to being in one of those priority groups, it's not going to be an advantage that spans 3 or 4 months. It's going to be an advantage that may span several weeks. So it's going to be much more limited in time than that. And we're looking with great enthusiasm at what President Biden announced the other day about the federal government doing some stockpiling and allowing states who express a need and have a valid plan in place to actually increase their allocation of vaccine. So the minute that was announced in the last couple of days, we already have teams working on that and trying to see if the federal government can operationalize that and implement it so that we can benefit from it. And that will help even more with the concern that was raised by the caller.
Karen, thanks for your phone call. Let's turn to David in St. Johnsbury. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Dr. Levine, thanks so much for your time. We're going to segue now from barnstorming and politics to some science. And I'd like to ask the doctor, why is the medicine, that's what basically a vaccine is, would be the same for a 19-year-old athlete or an 80-year-old person who happens to be obese? Why is the same medicine administered to a very young, healthy person or an elderly person who has a lot of health conditions? Why is it a one-size-fits-all vaccine? Thank you.
Okay, David, thanks for your question. Commissioner?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. And I can answer it very simply by having, well, David could, or I could just explain quickly the fact that all these vaccines that are now approved, all three of them, have gone through significant phase one, phase two, phase three trials. And the designs of those trials explore various dosages and dosing strategies and look at the effectiveness as well as the safety by those strategies. Then when you get to the phase three, you actually, if you have a large enough study, and in this case, the studies are 30,000+ people large, you can sort out people of different age groups, people of different sex, people of different race, people with different degrees of chronic or high-risk conditions, and see how the vaccine performs at the dose and in the protocol administered for each of those groups. And what we've learned is that it actually works very well across the board. Yes, there are differences between the groups that we have to be cognizant of, but they didn't merit dramatic differences in dosing strategies or approaches to the 18-year-old who was healthy versus the 80-year-old who had several higher-risk conditions. So that's a very straightforward, simple answer. It has nuances and complications, but that's really what the listeners need to know.
Let's talk to Joe, who is calling from Manchester. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Hi there. And thank you, Dr. Levine, for all that you do and have done for us. My question is this. I own a yoga studio in Manchester, Vermont, and I'm confused about the guidelines. Following the steps, step two, May 1st, says that that masks and six-foot distancing is still required. And then under the guidance for the masks, it says that, I believe it says that, if you are inside and are 6 feet apart, you can take your mask off. So I'm just trying to figure out what it is inside
okay.
on May 1st.
Yeah, no, I think what you're referring to is our newest rule is that if you are outside and can maintain social distancing, we do not believe you need to be wearing a mask. If you're outside and in a crowd, you would be best served wearing a mask. But the transmissibility of the virus is so much less in the outdoors environment than it is indoors. For the purpose of your yoga studio, you could actually do yoga outside. So that would be an option for you. But assuming you do it in the studio, people need to be masked. So it's really a differentiation between the indoor and outdoor environments in the way I outlined.
Joe, thanks for your phone call. Commissioner, we're almost out of time, but we're seeing some states around the country, Texas and Florida come to mind, that are basically dropping all their restrictions and bringing life back to the way it used to be. No social distancing, no masks. When you see states doing that, as a healthcare professional and as a doctor, what is your reaction?
I'm glad you said it as a healthcare professional and a doctor, as opposed to what I see politically, because I don't want to answer as a politician. I believe in the approach that we've used here in Vermont from a public health standpoint, that there are ways to both mitigate, meaning when the circumstances are really bad and you need to deal with the virus, and there are ways to reopen and at times when the virus is not as much of a problem. And I believe the way we've done it is really, adhering to that kind of philosophy in Vermont, where doing things in a phased way, making sure that one change doesn't lead to an unanticipated consequence, making sure that we continue to follow the data very closely, whether it be positivity rates or new case rates or hospitalization rates or what have you, because we follow those all the time. And I just believe that our outcomes in Vermont support doing that. There are states that, and there are studies that have actually compared the economic performance of various states. And Vermont actually looks very good on those studies and can be compared side by side with states that have the same economic result that we had, yet they had a very different public health approach and had much higher death rates, hospitalization rates, case rates. Mm-hmm. We chose to go the way that would protect Vermonters the most and keep them the safest. And that goes for both the way in, the way back with stay home, stay safe, and the way out, which is now with the vaccine and with the opportunity to really return to a better state of normalcy.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion about many of the issues surrounding the pandemic. Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine, many, many thanks for taking the time to be with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Bob.